Blog Talk Radio.
Circle of Sanity with me, your humble host, Yale Beverly, and on the left coast, the fabulous, fantastical Miss Kamal, who I think is there.
I'm here. I was just waiting for you to continue adding adjectives to my title. That's all you need to add. Gorgeous and beautiful and Queen of All She Surveys.
Queen of All She Surveys and the undisputed leader of hot nickels in a sock upside your head.
Or quarters, if the situation calls for it.
It's a bad economy. We take what we can get. So first of all, let me start off by saying, Kamal, how are you this evening? How you doing, love?
You know how I'm doing, but I'm just because you're starting to
I know.
Stuff.
They don't know.
Stuff.
I know.
I am doing just fine. Thank you for asking.
You know, I come to tonight's show with a heavy heart, as my girl went to be with the father last night. Delmonica Hines lost her valiant fight against breast cancer last evening. And as they say, in a lot of news reports, seems to be cliche these days, but she died surrounded by friends and family who love and loved her dearly. And as much as that moment hurts me, it buoys me to know that she was not alone. So I'm dedicating tonight's show to Del, as I did last week, and as I will do for as long as I continue to do this show. Del and her family and all of her circle of friends and family of friends will always be forefront in my memory.
That's so sweet. I'm
a nice guy. I don't like that to get out. I want people to keep that on the low, as you hipsters say. You hip kids today. Everyone thinks I'm a bad, evil person, so I like to keep it that way.
Well, golly gee willikers, jump in Jehoshaphat's.
Hey, this is a family show. I'm not having all that kind of language out here. So let's talk.
Cat's pajamas.
I thought it was the cat's meow.
No, it's the cat's pajamas.
So talk to me. What's going on? What's new? What are we going to talk about this evening, Kamal? What's happening on the left coast? You got any more zombie sighting?
No, but we are fully preparing for it. If you complain, my kids have drawn up the schematics for building a compound just in case.
You're going to need your zombie, what is it, the zombie survival kit?
We already got it. We are fully prepared. As long as one of us don't get it, we're good.
Women and children first, sacrifice them.
Right. But as long as we don't come down with the super flu, or accidentally eat some bath salts, we got this covered. We haven't made a contingency plan for if one of us is a zombie.
Well, if in doubt, then shoot first and go, oh, well, second.
No, not shoot, shoot, shoot. Remember, one's the melon, one to make sure.
Right, double tap.
Double tap.
So if your husband comes limping in the house.
Well, he already knows. We had to discuss a long time ago, and it had nothing to do with zombies. It was an axe murder. I was like, you know, I'm going to trip you so me and the girls can get out, right?
Right.
I love you. Right. I said, I can get another husband. I can't get no more kids. You on the list.
I can't. I don't need to outrun the killer. I just need to outrun you.
Right. Trip, trip.
Trip.
Don't
fall,
happy.
Fool. Don't fall. Because if you fall, you always.
That's your ass. I'm not coming back. We just going to keep running and say, damn, we're going to miss Daddy.
Just remember, Daddy made the ultimate sacrifice so we could get out.
That's right. Your daddy loved you so much. He fell. Mommy, didn't you trip him? No, 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 baby. He fell.
He fell. And if he were alive to tell you, which, of course, he's not, he would tell you he fell.
Right, right, right.
So the zombie apocalypse is not on us, but the soda apocalypse just might be.
And you know I'm liberal, but come on now, really?
Well, you know, I'm conflicted.
Go ahead.
I mean, I am afflicted, but I'm also conflicted. I think it's a darn shame to try to drink 32 ounces of soda in a movie theater anyway. And why they keep making soda cups bigger and bigger. I worked in a movie theater when I was 18 years old, right out of high school. A small was like an 8-ounce cup.
Yep. No, no, no. That was the courtesy cup. Remember, the courtesy cup was eight ounces. Oh, wait.
No, no, no. The courtesy cup was like a shot glass, a paper shot glass. You're going to get this sip of soda so you can decide which soda you want.
I keep forgetting you're 87. So back then, you know, 70 years ago, yes, that is accurate.
Right, right. We used to, the movie theater, the big movie theater in Columbia, Maryland, only had two houses. You got Cinema 1, Cinema 2. And we popped the popcorn upstairs. Everyone thought we shipped it in. We popped it upstairs in the popping machine, brought it downstairs, used real imitation butter.
Yes, so did we.
Right, not real imitation butter type flavoring. We used real imitation butter.
Yeah, I think ours was butter top. I think ours was flavoring because it was an odd color.
Yeah, yeah. Don't let that stuff coagulate.
Yeah. Oh, I know. Oh, for... my God. Wasn't that disgusting?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But when you ordered a small, you got an 8-ounce cup. You ordered a medium, I think you got a 10 or 11, 12-ounce cup. And the large was, yeah, it was no more than 12 ounces. You get the super size, which may have been 14 ounces. Ooh, heaven forbid. But,
Now, I hear you. I went to Jack in the Box and ordered a large and got like 64 ounces. And I was like, this is called Gigantor. This is not large. Large is 20 ounces. Let's try this again. That was their medium.
I don't know when it happened. I mean, but why? Why did we go there? Why did we go there? And I know you're liberal, and I'm not as liberal as you. I'm a little more conservative because I believe that you should have the right to have a gun in your house to shoot whomever in the house you don't want to be there, whether they be invited in or not.
I don't have a problem with people having guns in their house. I just don't want them in my house.
That's understandable. Because we know if you're going to bring a sack of hot nickels to the fight, you don't want anybody coming at you with a gun. But
right. No, and how about my front door opens, and at the top of my stairs is a kitchen. So you can come in here if you want to, but by the time you get up to the steps, you will have several hot cast iron pans thrown at your ass, period, point blank. I don't need a gun. I got cast iron pans waiting on the ready at the top of the stairs. Good luck with that.
Note to all listeners, go in the back door of Kamal's house if you want to get in without having an iron skillet slapped
at you. And how about you can't? If you want to get me upstairs, there's only one way. You got to come up these stairs. See, that's why we're going to survive the zombie apocalypse, because there's only one entrance. We got this.
Okay, suppose they blockade that entrance. Then what you going to do?
Say what
right.
now? What'd
throw the
say?
Husband at the zombies and go out the window.
Right, and we'll climb out the balcony. But that's okay. I can barricade the top of my steps. We good? I'm not worried about it.
But back to the soda issue, when did it become cool to try to bust your bladder to watch a movie? A movie lasts 2 hours, hour, 45 minutes, sometimes longer than two. Your bladder can't hold a 64-ounce soda.
Right, and you know what? I have never in my life been able to finish that large. I always get the large because they have those, you know, the producer pack or whatever, you know, the different combos. And I always get a popcorn and the two large drinks because that's $19. You heard me, $19. And then I get courtesy cups and little trays. And I just spread the courtesy cups out and spread the trays out, and we share. But I have never in my life been able to finish that large drink.
And I've seen people get them and finish them and drink them, but they're usually the people that you praise sit in the back row and that you're in front of before the movie, when the movie ends. Because you can't see around them, and Lord knows you don't want to try to be leaving the theater behind them. But why does it take New York City to say, this is out of control, we don't need soda dispensed in tubs for people, and then to put a fine on it? Have a little self-control. If you know, you don't need to drink that much soda in a movie theater. This is why you want to talk about the obesity problem in this country. I think part of it has to do with the fact that we don't exercise self-control anymore. And I'm guilty. Lord knows I'm guilty. I go get a chicken box. I don't get two-piece. I get three-piece, and then I get my fries. But I don't drink soda, so I can't fall into the soda problem.
But, I mean, that's what you choose to do. I mean, who am I? Or who's the city of New York to say, you know what, yeah, you don't need three pieces of chicken. You can just have one.
Right. But, you know, we have to start legislating our own self-control. We're in trouble in this country.
You know what, I would prefer, if I were a New Yorker, I would prefer their time and energy be used to deal with the drug issue and the disparity in drug sentencing. I mean, I think that we can all agree drugs are a little more dangerous than 64 ounces of Coke, a cola.
See, I'm going to have to agree to disagree with you on this. I'd rather get hit with a 64-ounce cup of marijuana than get hit with a 64-ounce cup of soda and ice. That's going to hurt.
But you see the point I'm trying to make, and you know, and when I say deal with it, I mean I'm talking about not cracking down and outlawing it, marijuana. You know, at this point, I think you know we really need to seriously think about legalizing it. But I would like to see more time and energy spent towards the drug issue as a whole. I mean, even pharmaceutical drugs, how expensive they are, and how they, you know, rape. That's a bad term, but, you know, the elderly in terms of trying to pay for their medication. I mean, it's like that dealing with soda is just so stupid to me. And then to deal with it on National Donut Day where the mayor of New York is presented with a 3-pound donut, yeah, okay.
Well, you know, those of us who watch Jon Stewart and The Daily Show, I thought it was very entertaining that he showed the size of a pastrami sandwich you can get at one of New York's most famous delis.
Right. That 4-pound heart attack.
Right, 4 pounds of meat with 2 pieces of bread between it just so you can call it a sandwich, but you got to wash that down with 12 ounces of soda or less. But I mean, we take all this to the extreme, but the reality of the situation is America has become addicted to our own gluttony. You know?
Yes, and there is an obesity problem, and it is a drain on the healthcare system. You know, I freely admit that, but I think there are other things that we can do to fix that. I mean, how about initiatives to bring in, you know, grocery stores that actually sell fruit and vegetables in the inner city? I mean, there are places where Black folks live that don't have grocery stores. All they can do is
I'm one of those neighborhoods. We just got two grocery stores in the last 2 years in my neighborhood.
See? You know, and if you don't have a car to go to a grocery store, you're SOL. And they built a grocery store over about 3 miles from my house in a low-income housing area, and my husband and I went there, and we were shocked at how rich you have to be poor, if that makes any sense. Because, you know, a jar of Ragu was like $3. I'm like, if y'all could go to Safeway a mile away, it's $1.25. But this is low-income housing. They don't have cars. You know, thank God they have a grocery store. But it don't make sense for them to have to pay a dollar an apple, you know?
Right.
In Washington, we grow apples. We need to get them for free as far as I'm concerned.
So you all should get salmon for free, too, but that's a whole other story. And I
don't even get me started on the price of salmon in salmon
country. It can't
country.
Be expensive.
Can't $4 or $5 a pound.
What? What if you go catch it yourself? Stand out there in the river with the fishing rod and the bears and catch your own salmon. What's the problem with that?
Right. Think we didn't? Right. There and where I live, 2 miles away, is the river. There's plenty of salmon. So we just catch our own.
Well, let me tell you something. I live here in Maryland, in Baltimore, and we're not that far from Chesapeake Bay or the Atlantic Ocean, and the price of Maryland blue crabs has skyrocketed over the last several years. Growing up, my parents would have crab parties where people would come and we'd get a bushel of crabs, live crabs, and steam them ourselves and eat crabs and drink beer. And I believe a bushel of crabs back then may have been $27. And now, $27, you might get a dozen crabs, maybe. It's probably more like 34 dozen crabs. And I hate to say it, but probably in the early 90s, well, mid-90s, mid to late 90s, I was in New Orleans, and I was invited to a crab boil, which is sort of the same thing, except they boil their crabs. They don't steam them like we do here on the East Coast. But a bushel of crabs down there in the late 90s was like $5. Now, today, I don't know how much those crabs will cost, but I'm sure 7 years after Katrina, those crabs are really, really big.
Well, how about we have Dungeness crab here, and I could go crabbing if I felt like it, but in the store, it's $6 a pound.
Woo!
Sometimes $8.
Woo!
We pay for the convenience. That's what it boils down to.
You got to pay people to pick them. You know, here in Maryland, you know, the people on the Eastern Shore where the crabs are harvested and packed into crab meat containers for shipping all over the country, but especially here in Baltimore, you got to pay those ladies to reach in the crab and, you know, pick the meat out and try not to get shell. And they don't come cheap anymore. And there is an influx of cheap labor. The Hispanic laborers are down there on the Eastern Shore, and they're paying them cheaper wages than they would have to pay someone who knows what a living wage is really supposed to be about. But they still have to pay it in the price of gas for shipping. I mean, it all comes into play. But it's just ridiculous now that we live so close to water on both sides of the country, and we pay so much for seafood. Now, I'm a fisherman.
It's ridiculous.
I'll go down to the bay to fish in a heartbeat, and I'll get a charter boat, and I'll go out there and fish. But even that's getting to be more expensive. And a fishing trip 2 years ago, after you subtract the cost for my gear that I had to re-up and, you know, sinkers and hooks and all, the cost for the charter itself was $60 a person. Now, I think that's a little out of control. But
you know how much I paid for my stepdad and my husband and his best friend to go salmon fishing in a boat 2 summers ago? $475. $475.
$4.75?
$4.75.
Now,
add some zeros. 475. How many people? Three. Uh-huh. And they came back with one fish. I told them, I said, I just paid nearly $500 for one fish. You guys better get your asses right back out there on the Columbia River, and don't you come home until you got 5-6 fishes, period.
See, so this is how this happens, right? This is the orders you didn't give out ahead of time, and this is, as a fisherman, we know this. When you pay that kind of money to go on a fishing trip, you come back with either a cooler full of fish or somebody fell overboard and we didn't catch any fish because we were trying to save them and it was, oh, such a dreadful situation. Barring that, you stop at the seafood market and bring fish home.
I wish they had. I really wish they had.
You don't come home empty-handed.
Now, the salmon that they caught was a 22-pounder, and it was good, but we needed more fish than that for $475.
Oh, I agree.
I could have bought a 20-pounder at the grocery store for less than that. But they did enjoy the male bonding and the whole experience. So, you know, it kind of weighed out. But I'll never do it again. I'll buy myself a boat before I do that again.
Right. That would be nice to have my own boat. But I do enjoy getting out on the water. It's kind of peaceful and it's fun. It gets kind of competitive. But we catch fish. The captain knows we better all catch fish. He better not come up with, it's a bad day. Because you know what? We might not be able to get us back to the pier, but we can get back to shore. So you better make sure
right.
Everybody catches some fish. So
back to the discussion at hand. I mean, you know, I just think grown folks need to be able to do what grown folks do. You know, I could understand, you know, instituting something like that in the schools because adolescent obesity is out of control, absolutely out of control.
Right.
But free-thinking adults, if I want, you know, 64 ounces of Coca-Cola, I should be able to get 64 ounces of Coca-Cola and ain't nobody's business.
That's true. That's true. But they need to stop selling it because it also helps them upsell. Like you said, by the time you finish buying your soda and your popcorn and your candy and the cost of the movie ticket, you're out $60 on a date for, I mean, you and your husband, you have, you know, family. But I took my son to the movies the other day, and I used my discount card and got our movie tickets for $8 for total. And I paid $25 for concessions, and all we had was popcorn, two drinks, and some candy.
But see, you know, it's a little different for me because I'm not used to paying for movies because
you bootleg.
Well, and I'm a film critic, thank you very much. But I have a larger family than you do. So it literally cost me $100 to take all three kids to see a movie. It cost me, like, we like to do the IMAX. I mean, we could do 2D, but if we're going to go, we're going to enjoy it. So
right.
Often it costs me $50 just getting us into the theater. And then, you know, they don't allow outside food, so I have to carry my backpack filled with dollar store candy. But part of going to the movies is, you know, you have the popcorn. It's part of the experience. So by the time I'm done with that and concessions and paying for parking, I'm out $100, easy. Which is why some people advocate bootlegging. I'm not one of those people, of course. I would never suggest such a thing.
No, and I don't begrudge.
Even though I heard it's really, really easy to do, so I've been
right,
told.
Right, I've heard that as well. And I know people who do it very well, and I'm sure you know people who do it very well.
Yeah,
I'm sure
we know
people together who have done it very well and very easily. But
yeah,
what it me, it's made me become a more selective movie goer. You know,
yeah.
Back in the, we would go to the movies all summer long. Now, if I go to 5 movies a year, 4 of them will be during the summer months. And
yeah,
they have,
but I don't have that. I don't have that luxury. I mean, I often see movies for free, but I can only bring one person with me, and you know, I can't, you know, short my kids, so I opt not to go see it for free, and so I can take my all my kids to see it.
Right, and I understand that, and my son gets me to go to movies, but I'm you know, you being a movie critic, it's your livelihood. For me, it's a luxury. So I discount out the movies that they send, you know, they put out for kids, because that's part of being a parent. So I went to see Madagascar 3, loved it, but that's not included in the movies I want to go see. You know,
well, I'll tell you what, you can scratch Prometheus right off your list.
Don't say that. Don't you blaspheme on this show. Don't you blaspheme on this show. I'm going to see Prometheus and it's going to rock.
So I really like Ridley Scott as a storyteller. I think that he has really good vision. I like how he tells his stories. But when the story – all right, I'm not going to say nothing.
See, you want to give it away, don't you? You give away the show, don't you?
No, I don't want to give away the whole thing, but you know how we do with horror movies, you know, don't walk off by yourself, don't, you know, stuff like that. There was a lot of that. And so how can I say this without giving it away? I don't think I could say it without giving it away. A particular character wants to know the motivation of the aliens. And my whole thing was, every single time you are in a room with one, they try to kill you. You know their motivation at that point. There is no need for further investigation.
Okay, so let me, unless Hollywood has gotten away from scripted dogma, and I haven't seen the movie yet. So I'm going to just go out on a limb and say the individual that wants to know the motivation for the aliens is a white person. Because in every Hollywood movie, the black people don't want to know the motivation. They just want to know when we leave and when we're getting out.
Right.
And, the
particular black person, the particular black person in this movie was like, when we leaving. But that said, the brother rule was in full effect, and I was kind of salty. Well, you know what? It wasn't quite on point, because with the brother rule, you know, they have to die between minute 60 and minute 68.
Mm-hmm.
And he lasted a little longer than that. But you do have to sacrifice yourself for the white folks. And in his defense, he was sacrificing himself for all of humanity. So I couldn't really, really fault them for the brother rule. But, you know, I said before, and this movie takes place in 2093, I said this about, I think, 5 years ago. We as black people need to get all our shit done by 2015, period, point blank, because every movie that takes place after 2015, we are non-existent. So somewhere between now and 2015, they're going to put us somewhere. I don't know where. I mean, I looked at the Minority Report. I said, okay, it's minority. You know, it's D.C. Was one black person in D.C. That took place in 2022. So I knew that wasn't happening. And then Reign of Fire took place in 2015, and there was one black person, and they fed him to a dragon. So I was like, we just can't get the break.
What year did Blade Runner take place?
I don't remember what year it took place, but it's obviously – but you know what, though? Because of when it was made, their future could have been 2010 for all I know.
Right.
But
the thing that was striking to me in Blade Runner is the overpopulous minority in Blade Runner were Asians. So someone missed, because the Hispanic population has really pushed everybody else's priority group down.
Right, right. So anyway, back to Prometheus. I mean, I liked the concept of, you know, how did we come to be? You know, who created us? I mean, I expect the Christians will try and boycott it. So I did like that aspect of it. But, you know, as they're working through this problem of where, how did we come to be, people's dying. And I'm just like, you know what, I'm just going to go on home right now, because obviously they don't want me to know the answer.
Well, obviously. I mean, it's supposed to be a prequel to Alien, Aliens, and Alien, the Requiem,
yes.
And the, right?
So, well, yes and no. I mean, they do, you have to stay through the very end, because they do address that with a little surprise. So, I mean, it's, you don't understand that it's a prequel, if you will, until the very end.
And then when you get to the end, you understand everything that's going on?
No.
Okay.
So here's what happens. There is mythology missing. So once they make it a prequel to the Alien, you have to try and figure out, okay, well, how did they get from here? How did they get from Prometheus to Sigourney Weaver's Alien 1979? I don't remember what year that one takes place, but there is some serious evolution that has to happen between those two movies. Evolution, not just physical evolution, but intelligent evolution. Because, you know, the aliens we've come to know aren't exactly stupid. So we have to figure out how they get from Prometheus to Alien. And I think that there is a flaw in that mythology. They would clear it up with a sequel, but I'm not necessarily sure I want to see a sequel.
Okay, so all of our listeners who are sci-fi buffs and intrigued by movies, go see it for yourself, and then you have to decide for yourself if Kamal is crazy or if Yale knows exactly what he's talking about.
Okay, but you know what? You need to go at a matinee. I'm just saying.
Okay, I'll give you that. So from science fiction to real fiction, American fiction, let's delve into what we delve into, the political scene here in these United States of America. And in case people aren't tuned in as well as you and I are, it was announced today that Andrew Zimmerman's wife was arrested for perjury.
See?
And I'm sorry, I keep saying Andrew Zimmerman. It's Andrew Zimmern, who is the host of Bizarre Foods America, and it's George Zimmerman, who is the man who stands accused of murdering Trayvon Martin. And I apologize to Mr. Zimmern, whose show I love watching. And let's get back on George Zimmerman. His wife
but
was arrested.
We knew that. We knew that, because when he got the new lawyer and one of the reporters brought up the website, the lawyer did some CYA. He was like, I'm not the executor. I know nothing about it. I'm just coming in late. I don't know what, if any money has been collected. I'm just not in charge of that. That lawyer knew. He knew.
Well, yeah,
he
wouldn't have taken the case
if
he didn't have some idea what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She perjured herself. Yep. Hey, anybody see? This case, it's going to take a good year to get it to in front of a jury, but this case is going to be off the chain.
Well, I think what it does is capitalizes where we are in this country, that most people who have their own political agenda have drawn lines as to which side they're on. And as I've said before, and as we've discussed before, there is no need to draw lines. There's no need to take sides. You throw out all of the political craziness that surrounds this case, and what you have is a young man who was doing nothing illegal was killed by someone who was overzealous at the utmost in trying to pursue his own agenda.
Right, and we've said before, if he had just what?
Stayed in the truck.
Stayed in the car, Trayvon would be what?
Alive today.
Thank you.
But if Trayvon Martin had been white, if George Zimmerman had been black, which side would we be all coming down on now? But the issue remains, if they're both purple and everyone in this country is purple, it would have never made national attention. But what you had was someone with a gun killed someone who had a bag of Skittles. And all the politicizing aside, why are we so polarized today that we have to draw sides to what should be an open and shut case of bad judgment gone really bad and the death of a young man whose future was in front of him? So now we have people drawing, you know, lines of battle. I'm on the side of George Zimmerman. You never know what the kid could have done. I'm on the side of Trayvon. He wasn't doing anything. And it's out of control. And it's sad that we as a country have come to this. And as I wrote in today's Nightlife newsletter, available to subscribers, we are polarized along racial lines today more so than we've been since the late 1960s. And sadly, I think it's because the power structure of this country refuses to have the president of the United States be a black man who is helping save our country from dire economic straits.
You know, I think of it a little differently. I think of it more locally than nationally. I think that locally, that community has had a lot of difficulty, historic difficulty, prior to President Obama becoming President Obama. That particular police precinct is off the chain. You know, they have been turning a blind eye to black people being beaten to death and injured for quite some time. And so I think in this particular case, they were already polarized.
No doubt. But the politicalization of the issue is racially motivated, and people are drawing lines, I think, because President Obama is black. And race has become an issue in this country now that it really should not be. But it's at the front now where people are not afraid or not ashamed to say, hey, I don't believe people of color should have this, or I don't believe black should have that, and I don't believe Hispanic should have that. I mean, and we all laugh and joke and have a good time about it on a certain level, but the vitriol has become so perverse and pervasive in this country today, it's almost scary. It's almost scary.
I do agree. I mean, I don't know if I agree about it from the aspect of the Trayvon Martin case, but in general, I do agree with you. I think, you know, I've spoken to my husband about this, that, you know, the lunatic fringe, since he became president, has gotten a little bit closer to the center. You know, there are a lot of people who you would never dream of, you know, feeling any racial animosity are coming out loud and proud, and that is scary. You know, I'm sure that a lot of these teabaggers didn't wake up and, I mean, weren't this nasty before President Obama, you know. They had, oh, I have a black friend, oh, you know, black people, you know what I mean? But once he became president, that lunatic fringe keeps getting larger and larger and larger, and it's encompassing the middle. What word was I trying to say?
You're trying to use big words.
Well, you were using them.
I have a dictionary in front of me, and I can use
them. So I was trying to say encompassing, right? That's what I was trying to say.
Capacitating.
I was trying to say, you know what it reminds me of? Remember that character on The Living Color? He was in prison. He would try to use all these big words.
Yes.
And couldn't. Yeah.
And I know people like that.
Yeah, your co-host, for example. Except for I'm educated, so I should know how to say these words. But you know what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I do know what you're trying to say. But it's what you're hitting on, and very well, I might add, is that there's no more shame in being racist.
Yes. Exactly. They're letting their freak flag fly.
Yeah. Yeah, unashamedly so. And I'd like to add, I would love to have a devout, unashamed racist come on the show, and we debate racism in this country today. And that racist can be black, that racist can be white, that racist can be of any color, creed, whatever.
Lord, I can't take it. You know, we're trying to keep this a family-friendly show. You know my mouth.
Well, yeah. But seeing as you hate everybody that's not you, wait a minute, that's me. I hate everybody that's not me.
Right.
I think it would be a good show just to expose some of the things that we all live with every day, we don't acknowledge, but we see it every day.
But how do I flip a table on the radio? I'm not quite sure how I do that.
We can get a sound effects department, and they can come in and they can make those noises.
Okay. All right. Okay, then we can have them on there.
Looks like we have a caller that wants to chime in, I think. Let me see. I have a caller. Caller from 917 area code. Would you like to add something to the conversation?
Yes. How you doing? I'm from New York.
Hi, New Yorker. How are you?
Good. Thank you.
Good. You want to give us your name, or you just want to stay anonymous? Or as Kamal would say, anonymous.
Animositous.
My name is Jay.
Hi, Jay.
How you doing?
Okay. I kind of disagree. I'm not a tea bagger, but I agree with the Tea Party, and
okay.
I'm not a racist. But what's happening here, unfortunately, is that there's people who are pointing their finger, trying to cause conflict. They look for cases to make you scared, make you angry at white people.
Mm-hmm.
They want, because, you know, they want to keep, unfortunately, it's very sad for me to see, this is what I see, maybe I'm wrong, I don't think so, but they're keeping most of the black community isolated with anger and fear, and by zoning them, and all the schools in the zones where majority of African Americans live, are not educating the children. I believe it's because the left wants to isolate, outrage the black community, keep them dependent because they are racists, and then at any point they can, they will try to create more outrage and fear by, for example, pointing at the case with Zimmerman. where, you know, from the statistics that I see, you know, the most white murders are committed by white people. Most black murders are committed by black people. 95% of blacks murdered are by other blacks. But, you know, and they focus on only the one, two, or three that were killed by white people. And they completely ignore the others. Why? Because they want to create a conflict. They want to say, oh, look, white people are as if hunting down black people. And
well, you know, you know what?
I think that it's also just the opposite, because there are, I mean, your point is valid, where, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but your numbers may be right. You know, more black people care about black people, more white people care about white people. But I think that if you look at it from the other side, you'll see that what gets publicized are the white people who were killed by black people, and there's a fear of a black planet, and you know, see, you know, young black men are evil. Young black men will carjack you. Young black men will do this. There's a demonization of young black men, and I don't believe that's coming from the left.
Well,
no.
I think, you know, the way that I see that the black community is being almost egged on to say, hey, look what they're doing to you, that whites are against you, you can't make it in the America because it's a white world, what they're doing, and many in the black community agree with this and believe this. On the same side, there's also white people that see the anger of African Americans and see what they're showing on the media about the African American community, and they are scared. They're also scared because of what they're being, because of the propaganda being put out there.
Let me jump in real quick here, Jay, and let me say, along with Kamal, I do agree with some of what you're saying, but I want to hit a couple points, and then we'll move forward. The issue has always been for me, as far as the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin case, is not the fact that it was a white man that killed a black person, black kid, but it was the fact that a young child was killed who was doing nothing, and the attempt was made to sweep that under the carpet. Didn't matter to me that it was white versus black. It mattered to me that an innocent was killed doing nothing but trying to get home. And that in and of itself is just scary to its core, that, you know, we always have been taught, I don't care if you're black, white, yellow, brown, green, minding your business and you're doing nothing wrong, you have nothing to fear. And if someone approaches you, then just turn the other cheek and walk away. And what happened in this kid apparently did everything he was told to do and ended up dead. And if not for the fact that someone publicized it, whether it be black people or white people or whatever, we would not know about what happened to this kid. The kid's parents didn't know for 2 days what had happened to him. And yeah, and then now the lines have been drawn, and I agree with you that there are people with different agendas. As I said before, you've got blacks who have their agenda, who are pushing, you know, why we should be polarized about this issue and other issues. But what's sad to me in this country is throughout the 80s, we had the Cosby Show. People came to understand that black people can be just like anybody else. And now through the aughts and the 2010s, we have shows like Tyler Perry's House of Pain and other shows that are just feeding back into the old stereotypes of how blacks are and interact amongst each other and, you know, with other races. And it's a shame, but it sells, and we have people on both sides who buy into the stereotype. You have blacks that buy into the stereotype that basketball wives and is how people are supposed to act when they're out in public. And you have whites who expect that, you know, the Jersey Shore is how you're supposed to act when you're out in public. And the whole idea of people interacting and getting along, being successful and being in it together for a common good, that's gone by the wayside. That doesn't sell anymore. That's not on television anymore. We don't have any more Cosby shows. We don't have any more Brady Bunches, for that matter. And I think
I'd like to jump in for a second and address something that Jay said. You know, speaking from a personal standpoint with brothers, I'm the only girl surrounded by boys. You know, growing up in Southern California, my parents had to teach my brothers how to interact with the police, because interacting with the police as a black person was different. It was extremely different. There was so much corruption and so much police abuse that you had to do that. And so I don't think, moving forward from that, I don't think it's a fear of, you know, oh, this white person here, this white person there. It was more a fear of authoritative white folks as a whole. You didn't have to fear your neighbor. You didn't have to fear the white guy down the street. You didn't have to fear the store owner. But there was a fear of white police officers. And I think a lot, if you look through the history during different segments of history, different segments of time, like in your area, in New York was a powder keg in the late 80s. I don't know if you were there in the late 80s when there was all this police brutality aimed at black people. It was horrible. There was, I could think off my head, 7 deaths at the hands of New York police between 86 and 91. You know, that's where this fear comes about. And then you have cases where, you know, a white person has committed a crime and they point the finger at a black person. You know, the guy in Boston, the guy, I can't remember his name, but he had every black man on lockdown because he killed his wife. But instead of, you know, what he chose to do was say he got carjacked because he knew that people would fear black people, black men. So there was
a
free week for every...
That was the guy in Boston.
Yeah, that's what I said. It was in Boston.
Right. Who his last name was Smith.
No, wait.
I think
Houston
his last name
is... No. See,
Carolina,
Houston
who...
Smith.
Same thing.
Susan Smith is a woman who drove her car into the lake and drowned
right,
her
and
kid
blind.
And blamed black people. So,
right, and
I
when
mean,
they showed the sketch of the guy, she looked just... her artist rendering sketch looked just like my cousin Earl, who lives in South Carolina, and made me get on the phone and start making phone calls. Like, Earl, I know you didn't do anything, but stay in the
right.
house. Don't come
right.
outside.
So, Jay, I want to give you an opportunity to respond.
Well, you know, government and what individual people do, you know, there's plenty of cases of racism for sure. I'm sure there's tons of evidence of racism. But, you know, overall, we have to look, I think, what's happening and to understand that they're riling you up with the Trayvon Martin story. Yes, it's a tragedy. All the cases should be known. Every single case should be known. There's hundreds of cases of black kids being killed for no reason. They were just sitting in the park, or someone wanted to take $20 from them. You know, it wasn't someone trying to keep the neighborhood safe, but someone just trying to take $10, $20 from them and kill them, and we never hear it. And why isn't
right.
Al Sharpton doing it? Why isn't he doing it? Why only in this case, when it's supposed to be a white guy, it ends up being an Hispanic guy, and they go there like and protest like crazy, and they never mention the other one? It's because they have an agenda.
In defense of Sharpton, Trayvon's parents asked him to come. And he said, Sharpton said, this is not a white thing, this is not a black thing, this is a right thing and a wrong thing.
Well, that's what they tell you, but
he didn't tell me that. I saw him say it.
Yeah,
I watched him say it.
Right, he says that. What's he going to say? I want to create a race war? He's not going to say that. He's
no, but you know what, Jay? First of all, I got to pull you up on one small issue that is sticking in my craw, too, that you brought up that a lot of people don't bring up. It's as if America is drawing lines between white and blacks, and Hispanics and blacks can't not get along, and all the races can't get along. Whether George Zimmerman was Hispanic or pure white or whatever is not an issue to me. The issue is, I mean, is a person who's supposed to be an authority and supposed to have known better. So you're right. Yeah, we have black on black crime. We have other crimes that happen, white on white crime, brown on brown crime, that's never reported, and some of it's just as ridiculous. When you have a situation where someone is supposed to be an authority and know better, doesn't matter what color he is and the victim is. You have someone who's supposed to be in a neighborhood watch program, and what they're supposed to do is neighborhood watch. It's not neighborhood vigilante program. It's not. And people who know me know I'm a big Batman fan, so I'm a big Law and Order guy. But when you have someone who is supposedly trained to notify the police when something suspicious happens, and which George Zimmerman initially did, he's also supposed to know to pull up. Had the police been allowed to get to the scene before George Zimmerman got out the car, you don't know. Maybe they would have suspected Trayvon. Maybe they would have shot Trayvon. You don't know. But what we do know is George Zimmerman got out of that vehicle. He confronted Trayvon Martin. There was a struggle. And after Trayvon was dead, there was an attempt to sweep it under the carpet. And that does happen in this country far too often. And I think people on both sides, on all color lines, can attest to the fact that this happens far too often, that people in authority murder, kill, beat up, maim, hurt people who should be looking to them for protection, and then get away with it by sweeping it under the carpet because they have the power of the power elite behind them. They have
And don't forget that police precinct has a past history of sweeping stuff under the carpet.
Yes.
So, the reason was that there was evidence, and there's eyewitness and evidence that, and he had scrapes on the back of his head that he was attacked. I mean, who calls the police and tells them to come when they're going out to murder someone?
Exactly.
The guy was calling 911 himself, saying it's because there's been reports of burglaries. All the reports said that it was black people. So he sees a black guy who's 6'2". 6'2", with a hood, walking around in the rain, whatever. He's suspicious.
Because he has a hood on while it's raining.
Jay? He had a right to call in suspicious activity, but call in. He did not have the right or the authority to approach him. That's just stupid on his part anyway. If I see somebody out there suspicious and I know that there's been burglaries, I'm going to call the police. But I'm not going to go out and engage that person. And as a woman, I'll tell you this much, George, if I had been Trayvon, George would have had more than scrapes. Because if some strange dude comes up on me and I'm minding my own business, I'm going to try and kill him. Because I don't know what he's trying to do to me.
And that's a valid point. But, George, but Jay, let me ask you this. How tall are you?
6 foot.
6 foot. Okay. So... Are you a strapping person? Are you a thick person?
I'm a basketball player. No. I'm a basketball player.
Okay.
Yeah, basically.
So let's say you're driving down your neighborhood and you see a guy that looks like Shaq walking around your neighborhood, and the neighborhood, you know, you've had burglaries, and you get suspicious of him. Are you going to get out your car and confront Shaq?
No, but I might want to keep my eyes on him so that my neighbor doesn't get
and he says that
the guy came back to him. Remember, he said he's running away, and then, you know, how does he catch him if he's running? I mean, he basically somehow met up again.
We have George Zimmerman saying he was running away, but, and you may have witnesses that say that, but no one has said, you can talk about scrapes and scraps and bloody this and bloody that, which I have my own beliefs on, but no one has ever said George Zimmerman got out of the car, identified himself as Neighborhood Watch, and was wearing any kind of identifiable clothing to say he was what he said he was.
Look, it doesn't make sense. We can argue what, you know, this specific case. There's thousands of cases that we can say on, you know, that
exactly.
I can point. But
exactly.
I don't think he went up to a guy
point was
and
that
just.
He, that George Zimmerman was, after he confronted Trayvon, and maybe he tried to leave and Trayvon came after him, you yourself conceded you're not getting out the car to confront someone much bigger than you, no matter what you think is going on. So for him to do that, I don't think George Zimmerman's a racist. I think he's an idiot. But I think when you get out of the car to confront somebody, you better be prepared for whatever's going to happen.
No,
I live
I
in a neighborhood.
So.
My neighborhood is not the best neighborhood. It's not the worst neighborhood. It's not the best neighborhood. But I have situations in my neighborhood that happen all the time. And I know to call the police when it gets to be a certain way, and I know what I can go outside and what I can deal with myself. And I do that. But I'm not going to – I mean, I'll tell anybody, I'm 5'6" and a half. I weigh 100 pounds. If there's a guy 6'4" walking around my neighborhood with a hood on in the rain – and I think it's suspicious in my mind based upon whatever, I'm going to call 911, and if possible, I'll keep an eye on that person. But I'm not going to go up and confront that person because I have a gun and I think that gives me the authority to do so.
Exactly. Exactly.
So
why do you think he did that?
Because he's an idiot.
Because he's an idiot. He's an idiot.
Maybe he didn't
do that.
Maybe he didn't go and confront a guy bigger than him, but he was just looking around because he wants to protect his neighbors because it's scary when someone is going to burglarize your house.
Either way, you can
do
that.
But you're scared,
but
if you got a gun, it gives you an extra pair of testicles.
Yep.
And you don't get out the car. If he got out the car to just follow him, if he got out the car just to follow Trayvon, and I'm going to give you that. Let's say he just did that. Trayvon was talking to his girlfriend and said, there's a guy following me. And I don't know why.
Okay,
as
look,
George
we can listen. We
had
can,
the right to get out the car to follow him. Trayvon had the right to confront him and say, why are you following me?
Right. Okay. Yeah. No. Look, I don't think we should really debate what these guys were thinking when this happened because nobody knows. But,
right.
You know, it could be either way. Maybe this guy Zimmerman went to him and grabbed him, and I don't know. Maybe he didn't. Maybe the other guy went and jumped out of the bushes and attacked him. I don't know. But let's talk about something that we can actually make a progress in. I think, like for example, are you guys for having a school choice for parents voucher program? Because that is the key to ending 90% of this problem. Is the schools that the poor people have no choice. That's what the voucher program is set up for people that don't have choice. Other people, they have choice. They can move to a house in this neighborhood or that neighborhood. But the poor, they don't have a choice. That's really who the voucher program would help, and I don't know why the left is against it.
I grew up in Southern California.
Wait, hold on. I grew up in Southern California. We didn't have a voucher program, but we had a magnet program. And I got a very good education as a magnet student. I started taking French and Spanish classes in 1975. And I grew up in a poor neighborhood. I was bussed out. So, I mean, and we don't have a voucher program here in Washington, so I really can't speak on that. But there are plenty of places that do have the magnet school program. But I do agree with you that the education of our children should be a priority, and there is failure abound. But I wouldn't necessarily point it just at the left, because there have been, we've just seen the right saying, oh, we need to get rid of firemen, we need to get rid of teachers, we need to get rid of policemen. They're not passing stimulus bills that would actually go to hiring more teachers. Now, I don't know if that would be a fix for what you're saying, but it would certainly help if we had more teachers, more qualified teachers in these areas. I also know that New York is very, very unique in their educational system. I mean, you guys have so many schools, you have numbers for them. You can't even name them anymore. So I don't know how to fix New York's problem, but I do agree with you that there needs to be a light shined upon it.
Well, and in a future show, hopefully in the very near future, I hope to have representatives of the American Federation of Teachers on here, as well as school administrators, to debate that very issue, Jay. And I come down on both sides of that issue, and that's one of the reasons that this show is called The Circle of Sanity, because we don't actually draw hard lines along the lines that everyone would have everyone draw. I think the voucher program has some validity, but it also had a lot of problems. And I think one of the things that we've gotten away from as a society, as a family of American citizens, is the PTAs and the neighbors in the communities have gotten away from demanding excellence in the schools that we get. And I know for a fact that my mother would not have allowed me to get a second class or less than second class education in elementary school, junior high school, high school, just because that's what they felt they could get away with. And today's society, we have far too many parents who are willing to actually, you got to give them kudos for getting their kids out the house to the school. But once they get to the school, once they get out the house, they have no care or concern what happens in that school or what kind of education their children get. And we as parents have to be more involved and stand on that line and say, wait a minute. Why is my kid getting lower grades? Why are the standards in this school worse? And the voucher program may help, but we as a society have to stop relying on others to fix our own problems. If the neighborhood is bad and the school system is bad, it doesn't mean the teachers have to be bad. You have to hold the teachers accountable. You have to get on the teachers' nerves. I mean, to some point, you're going to have to make someone accountable for the education your children are getting. It would be great to send them to a tech magnet school or have the ability to send them to a tech magnet school. It would be great to have a voucher program to send them to a private school. But
right.
Even in the private schools, there are a lot of private schools that aren't serving our kids as well as they should be.
Okay, well, parents are
choosing
those schools.
If I'm being honest, you know, yeah, what's been one of my biggest complaints? My kids ain't never in school. You know, I don't fault the teachers for that. I do have an issue with teacher unions and the administration who provide, you know, all these in-service days. My kids are out of school literally, on average, 2 days a month, and not because I pulled them out, but because there's a teacher in service day, or they have to do this and they have to do that. And, you know, I have a great appreciation for teachers, so I don't like to criticize them. But, you know, if I'm going to complain about it, I'm going to direct it right at the unions, because I feel that sometimes we're raising a nation of dummies because kids ain't never in school. And you know, I'm saying ain't, but I'm educated. It's ridiculous, and I don't honestly know how to fix it.
Well, you got to stop blaming the unions. I mean, everyone's culpable. Everyone takes a bite. But the unions are not to blame as much as the parents, again, are to blame, and administrations are to blame, because the school unions don't pick the days the schools are open and closed. The school systems themselves pick those days. The parents, like you, are involved. And, yeah, I got to agree with you, Kamal. There's a lot of consternation about
here in Washington, yes, the teachers don't pick and choose which days they get off, but through the union, they negotiate it days off.
They get 3 months off, and they get 25 holidays. Every time they declare a national holiday in Congress, that's really the real reason they do it, is to give a day off to all the unions. All the union workers get paid off.
Not really. I mean,
yeah.
Martin Luther King's birthday was not for unions.
Right.
Independence Day was not.
You locked me on that one, Jay.
Well, look, listen, when you go to the supermarket, let's say, you know, when there's a choice, when you have a choice of where to buy your computer, for example, what would happen if one of these companies that sells computers made a deal with politicians that no one else can sell computers except for them? In your neighborhood, in your zone, in your district, what would happen? They're going to start raising prices, and they're going to give you garbage because you have no choice. You have to get it from them, and they're going to get paid high no matter what they give. The poor schools in the inner cities get more funding than outside the inner city, and even though they're the worst, more than private schools they get funding. And they don't care a dime about the kids because it's this computer company. They have no competition. They're paid from behind by taxpayers, and they just... They don't even – it's just a front, the whole education school.
Okay, we have a
what
valid
I would do is I would point to forced bus boy busing. I mean, Boston was a fire hazard in the 70s. They were blowing stuff up just because they wanted to bust in black kids into the more affluent schools.
That was in the South.
That was all over, but it really blew up in New York.
That was in the South where MLK marched.
Boston went
that was
haywire.
It was Boston.
Boston went haywire back in the 70s when they was forced busing.
Right.
But what you're talking about, busing in the South, was bad too, but it was to be expected. It was the fact that it happened in New York and, in New England, in Boston, in the so-called liberal North, that really got people up in arms because
North. And it was 20 years after Brown versus the Board of Education.
Right.
You know, so.
But to your point, about the computers, I mean, yeah, what would you do is what I would ask you back. What would you do if a computer company worked to deal with local jurisdictions that they were the only ones able to serve computers in the neighborhood? What would you do?
Here's what I would do. I would elect people who say the money that we spend on education per kid in America, which is $12,000 per student per year, or if you go into the inner cities, it's $15,000 to $25,000 per student per year, not including the pensions that they get later and they spend, but just for that year. Give that money to the parents of the children as a voucher and say, here, you can go anywhere you want. This is the money we're investing in your kid's education. You have to use it for school. They have to follow certain guidelines, just like all the private schools do. They have to, you know, teach math, science, and this. But other than that, the parents choose. Immediately what's going to happen is we're going to have an education system like the computer industry.
That $12,000 doesn't go to the student. My district administrator, who is three blocks from me, makes $137,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
That's it's not going to the teachers. It's not trickling down to the students.
No, but that's the budget of what they spend. So if you just, you know, give it to the parents, let them choose which schools. Let there be some public schools. If the parents choose them, then if they're good, the parents will choose them. If there's a worse, nobody will choose them, and they'll be taken over by someone that runs it right.
I'm getting a lot of feedback. Somebody's mic is close to the phone. I don't know if you're listening to the radio and on the. I'm listening to the computer and on your phone as well, Jabe. I'm getting a lot of feedback, but.
I'd say we give Arnie Duncan a chance. I think that he's got some really good ideas, and I think he's trying his best to implement them.
He is, but you also have to. What I want to bring to Jay is you have the overall picture right, where you would try to elect officials who would change that, but you as a consumer, if you can't get out access to another computer company to get another computer. Let's say you can't drive to that community, you can't find someone that can get a computer for you from another area. You have to think outside the box. You have to say the education that my kids are getting is important to me so much so that I can't get my kid to another school, but I'm going to find a way to get my kid another education. If that's the voucher program, you want to rely on a voucher program, that's fine. But you also have to become engaged in the system itself. Got another caller here from area code 617. I'd like to welcome you to the conversation.
But real quick, remember last year that woman in Cleveland who were allowing her kids to use her father's address? So they could go to a better school.
Right.
Got fined.
You got in trouble for that?
Yeah, I think she was fined and arrested.
Yes,
now,
she was.
What kind of system do we have where a parent is fined and arrested for trying to get their child a better education?
Yeah, but if I remember correctly, she was also trying to do things with welfare as well. She was trying to do a whole lot of hokey doke stuff and just got caught on a lot of stuff.
Okay.
Caller from area code 617. You're on the air.
Hey,
Oh, Ed. Hi, Ed.
How's it going? Yeah, look, I was just going to comment on my sort of experience in like a slightly different education system. And, you know, as you know, I lived in Australia for about 10 years, and you know, my kids sort of started school there before we moved back to Boston. And you know, they had an interesting thing, and I'll just tell you a quick story. You know, they became a sort of a federated country back in 1905. At the time, the government had no money. But, of course, for many years, you know, all the religious schools had been started there in the country. And so the government said, okay, we have no money. Why don't we just give money to all the schools that actually already exist, and you can just keep educating the kids because we don't have any money. What ended up happening is if you go there now, you know, as you know, we lived in Brisbane, and, you know, there were only three public schools in the whole city. It's a city that's, you know, slightly bigger than Baltimore, and everything else was essentially private schools. And they were generally loosely affiliated with either Episcopal or, you know, Anglican church or Catholic church, whatever it happened to be. But, you know, they were loosely affiliated. But the government ended up with a really good situation because essentially you had an entire system that was based on, if the school wasn't really very good, the parents didn't send their kids there. And over time, now look, this took like 60 years, you know, from like 1905 to say 1960s, 1970s. In the end, what you ended up with is, you know, a situation where, well, if the school was bad and the teachers were bad and people didn't like sending their kids there, they wouldn't take their kids there. And eventually the school would just sort of fall off the wayside. And the good schools, you know, always had good attendance. We were lucky in that we lived in a neighborhood where the school happened to be pretty good. But we had friends who also took their kids to that school that drove across the city to go there because there was no restriction on where you went. You just went to whatever school you felt like paying the money to. Now, again, the challenge with that in the States is that, you know, you have to do it. It's essentially almost an all or nothing. Australia was essentially an all in on, hey, we'll pay the government will just pay the best schools, you know, $8,500, $9,000 a year. And we paid about $150 a month for each kid, so we paid about, you know, $3,000 a year to send two kids to, you know, private school. But it was an all in system and it really worked out quite well. I think the challenge is in the States we have this sort of hybrid thing, like, well, we obviously have a predominance of public schools. The voucher system and sort of magnet schools is a little bit of an attempt, but it's such a small number. I mean, what would it be, 1% of the schools are charter schools in the whole country? You can't make a change, you know, in that kind of situation. You know, and that's really the challenge, I think, with it, with the whole thing that you know, other countries have done it really well. They just said, hey, all the government's going to do is pay money to some school on behalf of whatever kid feels like going there. And if the parents want to drive their kids to the other side of town, let them drive them to the other side of town. And that's perfectly fine with them.
You know why you know why it's only 1%? Because the unions, they realize that if parents have the choice, their job is at risk because the parents might not choose them, especially in many of the schools that exist right now. They know that they're not going to choose them.
Yeah.
So the unions are the ones that fight this, but, you know, the parents should be fighting for choice.
Yeah. The other thing I would note also, in Australia, there actually is not a teachers' union at all. So two things I would say about that. One is each local government, so like the city government or the town government, they have a very small education department, and essentially the only job of the education department is, even though it's predominantly private schools, they do sort of mandate, well, the level of the curriculum and whatever has to be done. So the education departments in both the federal and state government are very, very small. They're just there to kind of make sure the schools are doing what they're supposed to be doing at sort of an education level. Interestingly enough, teachers actually get paid quite well in Australia because it is kind of based on, well, if you're doing a good job and you work in a good school, you tend to get a good pay. And they've been able to do that without really having any kind of union environment even ever came into the situation. But again, the reason was that it started out where all the schools were private, you know, 100 years ago because there was nothing else for them to do. Worked its way out, but it was sort of the law of supply and demand. If you had a bad school, kids stopped going there, and eventually the school would sort of cave in, and another school would take over. So, I agree, it'd be really difficult to implement something like that today because you literally would have to say, okay, kids can go wherever they can get to, wherever their parents can drive them to, wherever you know, the best performances, and it'd be mayhem, I guess, to a certain extent.
Mayhem, and then you would have a situation of overcrowding in certain schools and underfunding in other schools, and would take some bite out of that, but you would also have situations where I think it leads to rampant corruption of the system, not necessarily paid corruption, but just corruption of the overall educational system in this country, where you would everyone
right
had.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I kind of, like I say, the only reason I think it worked, you know, there, and look, it's the same thing in the UK, you know, it's largely that way. It started out, you know, where private schools were kind of the only schools that existed, and the idea of public schools was not, you know, not really that common. I don't know how you'd do it today. I just think it'd be impossible, I would say, to dismantle the whole education
system. First, it can be done on local levels as soon as the unions, to get the unions out of the way from blocking it. They can start local, they can start state, and you know, if there's no school that has room to accept you, you're going to stay in a public school for a year or two or three, because within 3-4 years, when everyone has $10,000-$15,000 checks to give someone to go to their school, private schools are going to expand quickly. They're going to open branches in every neighborhood like Starbucks. And you're going to choose the best ones. I think you know, it can't be worse than what we have now.
Well, I hate to tell you, it can be worse. The situation can get really worse. And I'm not 100% pro union, but I do think unions serve a valid purpose here in this country for certain things. And the teachers' union is taking a lot of heat, and I think. Coming from a family of teachers, I had several aunts and cousins that have taught, and my sister's a teacher. I think one of the things you can't believe all the media hype about the teachers' union about is the one thing the teachers' union is very good for doing is to make sure that the teachers are not overwhelmed so that the students do get some kind of education. If you have And you best believe the school systems will do that. If you have 45 to 50 students in a classroom for one teacher, your kid is not being served. And the unions stand on that wall and say, no, that's way too many. Now, do they protect some teachers that need to go? In some cases, probably do. I mean, everyone falls through the cracks. But you also have situations where there are teachers who are underperforming and aren't up to par, and the unions will protect them only as far as it takes for them to get a better grasp on their job. They don't stand there and say, you have to keep this teacher who has been not coming to class and has not been educating the students. They don't stand there and say, okay, well, you've got to give our unions money just so we can educate your kids. At least I know from experience with the American Federation of Teachers, they do stand on the wall to prevent a lot of the mayhem that could happen from happening in this country.
I think they're just protecting their jobs, because if you're in a school that no parents don't have a choice, it's a pretty favorable position to have when you have a business that collects money from customers who don't have a choice but have to go to you. I just think it's obvious. I can't see why you don't see that if you're forced to go to a company like a public school and you don't have a choice, that they're going to take advantage. They never care. They don't care about the kids. They in Chicago, they get $75,000 per student per year average teacher salary. Administrators, $125,000 average. Class size per teacher per student is 22. 22 kids per class. The math reading on a global level, the math score is 16th percentile, bottom of the world, the math. And in reading, it's in the bottom 25% of the globe.
Well, let me ask you this real quick, Jay. So, how do you get information on the show? How do you know when the show is going to air and what we're talking about? Do you get that off of the Blog Talk site, or you follow Nightlifer, or how do you get information on the show?
No, normally this time I just look to see who's on. I've listened to you before, but I just happened to catch you today.
Okay. The reason I ask is because coming up in the very near future, as I said, I'm hoping to have some representatives from the American Federation of Teachers, and I would love to have you join in the conversation on that date. So if you would follow us and then actually subscribe to the Nightlifer newsletter, you'll know when that show is going to air, and I would love to have you come in and continue this conversation, as well as all my other listeners. And I want to thank Ed for calling in. I know you've listened to the broadcast before, and I really appreciate you calling in today. I really appreciate the input. But not only are we winding down here on time, but I think this is a debate that we could dedicate an entire show to, and I'd like to see that happen.
Yep.
And I might add that Ed's kids are extremely well educated, despite the fact that their father went to high school with me.
That's right. That's a few negative points down there, but they still survive. There's proof. There is hope.
There is hope. My son is in advanced placement classes, so there is hope. I don't know how it happened.
See,
and Kamal's,
it has nothing to do about where you are.
Exactly, or who you come from, because Kamal's daughters are extremely well-mannered and educated, and Lord knows.
I beg your pardon.
It must have skipped a generation.
I'm always down at the school administration building screaming Attica. Right power. You know me. I work hard to get my kids educated.
Well, we're gonna wrap up. And Jay, I encourage you to stay tuned in, become a follower, and call in when we have the teachers union people on. I would think in the next month or less we'll get that show on the air. So I'm gonna close the show out. There are a lot of topics we didn't get to today that we'll try to address next week, and encourage everyone to have people follow the show as well and listen to us, and we need you so we can keep growing and keep doing some wonderful things. And I'm cutting the show a few minutes short tonight so I could just play out a tribute to Del. He was a very important person to me, and just so her family knows that I am always here for them and always there for her, and just want to say that. So in closing, Kamal, I'll give you the last word before I push the button on the music.
Word.
Okay. So from the educational side, all our listeners, all our callers in, thank you so much. And have a good week, and we'll see you all here again, same bat time, same bat channel, next Tuesday night at 6:30 Eastern time. Nightlife or Circles.
Thanks, Ed and Jay, for calling in. We appreciate it.
Tell you, Guidry family.